Moncrief on News Talk.
16,500. That's the latest estimated death toll in Europe from climate change. Peter Thorne is Professor of Physical Geography and Climate Change at Maynooth University. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So this is an estimated figure, Peter. Could it be underestimated or overestimated?
Yeah, so the range on this is quite high. I would say it's probably a pretty conservative estimate because a lot of the deaths that are related to excess heat are not actually recorded as such. So I would say if it's wrong, it's probably wrong in the direction of being too cautious.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a bit like COVID deaths in that sense that somebody may had an underlying condition and COVID on top of that is what led to their demise. And so that mightn't be reported as a death from COVID. I assume it's the same here.
Yeah, indeed. And there was pretty brutal heat in Europe, to be honest, repeatedly during this summer. Some pretty amazing numbers, records broken by huge margins. There were a lot of deaths, and I suspect there's a lot of undercounting.
Yeah. So how did this? This was a British institute, the Grantham Institute, who came up with these figures, but it was based on previous models. Do you know how about they go about making this estimate?
So this was a rapid attribution study. You've probably heard of several of these. How much warmer, how much more likely, heat waves, etc. have done. And this takes it to the next level. It takes it down to the next level of causal inference, down to the actual impacts upon people, which ultimately is what matters. If it's record warm, that's fascinating meteorologically. But what actually matters is, has it had negative impacts upon people? Has it ultimately killed people? But what other impacts has it had? So it's taking that proven method and taking it to the next level.
Yeah, because in previous years, the death figures were actually higher than this. It was like 46,000 or something a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and that shows the power actually of effective adaptation. So 2003 was a real wake-up call, particularly in the Paris region. And they instigated a huge number of measures, cool spaces, communal spaces, other measures that effectively reduce the impact of heat. And we're going to have to get used to this in Europe, in Ireland as well. Much of this summer, many of your listeners would probably have felt consistently uncomfortable at night. And that's because the record warm summer was principally a result of the night times not cooling. And we're going to have to start thinking about adapting our building stock because it's all built to retain heat. And now we're in a trouble where for 2 or 3 months, maybe in the middle of summer, what we actually want to do is dispel that heat so we're more comfortable.
Yeah. Have many European countries come up with measures such as they have in Paris?
Many have, and many have taken real measures. And you look to the Mediterranean buildings are built effectively to dispel that heat. They're painted in white, which means they reflect much of the solar radiation coming in. They have slats on the windows, again, stopping solar gain during the day, stopping heating the house during the day so it can cool more effectively at night. So there are many measures all the way up from households to communities to entire cities taking measures. And we need to get serious about adaptation to climate change at this point in time.
Yeah, I assume that there are certain parts of Europe that are far more vulnerable to this now, because you mentioned France, but Spain, Portugal, Italy would be most in the firing line.
Yeah, so they'll get the biggest heat, but that doesn't mean they're the most vulnerable. Actually, vulnerability is how robust are you to that heat. So perversely, it's much of Northern Europe, it's the Nordics, it's ourselves, it's the UK, where we're not used to this heat, where our infrastructure is not built, where we can't cope with it, where the impacts and the excess deaths may actually be highest. Where you're used to it, you're already adapted to it, you already have the infrastructure, the behavioural patterns to deal with the extreme heat. The Spanish siesta is not for nothing. The Spanish siesta is a response to peak heat in the middle of the day.
Yeah. So in Ireland, what kind of measures do you think would you like to see being instituted?
we need to get serious about instigating communal cool spaces in our large cities. We need to start thinking about aiding people when we're retrofitting the buildings to be able to expel that excess heat in the summer. There's all kinds of measures, but adaptation is one of these things which is much harder than mitigation, reducing greenhouse gases. There it's fairly obvious. There's a fairly obvious roadmap. Adaptation is this thing where it's very place, context specific, individuals. It's about communities and even households making decisions now to make themselves robust to the increasing, ever increasing effects of climate change.
Well, given that we're giving people grants to insulate their homes further, what can we also do then to make sure during the increasingly hot summer months that that heat can be dispelled? What should be done to a structure to make that happen?
So many heat pumps actually can work in both directions. They can actually cool the house. So that's one of the things we can do is think about instigating when we install some of this technology, making sure we install the right technology that can do these things. It's also simple things. Like I said earlier, the Mediterranean, they have wooden slats that they push across the windows to stop the solar gain. It's those kind of simple things that we can do, which actually also potentially increase the value of the properties.
Even if now, obviously, this is to do with climate change, with trying to achieve net zero. As we all know, in Ireland, we're not doing so well on that front, to put it mildly. Even though, even if we did speed up that process and we achieved net zero by the end of next year, the heating we're seeing, that wouldn't go away, I assume.
No. So one of the biggest common fallacies is that reaching net zero returns climate to what it was. All the reaching net zero does is stop the climate getting worse. To go back to pre-industrial climate, we would need to actively remove huge amounts of principally carbon dioxide, but also other greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. So we are making things worse. We're making things worse at a scary pace. We're still increasing global greenhouse gas emissions year on year. So we know we've got a problem. We're actively making it worse. We've got to reach net zero first, but all that does is stop making it worse, to take it back to where it was, to take it back to where all our infrastructure is built to withstand. We need to actively remove a lot of greenhouse gases that have built up over the past two centuries from the atmosphere.
Okay, so a certain amount of damage has been done. How long would it, if the world achieved net zero, would it take decades, centuries to repair that damage?
So if we left it entirely to nature, it would be thousands of years.
Oh, wow.
That it would take for temperatures to go back. It would take even longer for sea level rise to go back to the normal, to the pre-industrial sea level. We can speed it up if we can develop and deploy cost-effective carbon capture and storage, removing the greenhouse gases from the atmosphere and placing them in effectively geological storage, because that's what the Earth will do over tens of thousands of years, is it will scrub the carbon dioxide, but it is not a quick process for nature. We need to give nature a helping hand, or we are stuck with a very much warmer world than would have been the case before the Industrial Revolution.
Peter, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Peter Thorne there, Professor of Physical Geography and Climate Change at Maynooth University. A few comments on this. One person says, we live in a new build, and while it's great in the winter, we're actually concerned about how warm it gets in hot weather. And I do feel that air conditioning is probably the next step. It is hard to keep up, and it's going to cost us a lot of money, not to mention the amount of electricity I imagine air conditioning consumes. Somebody else says, why is it always bad news when it comes to climate? I personally enjoyed the warm summer this year at home. Why do you think it's bad news? This is one of the things that bothers me about housing regulations, the requirements for insulation levels. That would have helped 40 years ago, but because we've been using less energy for heat, but it's too late now. The warming is here and it's going to get worse, and houses will become a furnace. Well, you see, that's the thing about it. That's why they kind of stopped calling it global warming and change that to climate change, because it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's going to be scorching hot in January or something like that. It'll become more and more difficult as each year goes past to predict what the weather's going to be like. Might be roasting, but you might get blown to bits by a storm. The insulation improvement also helps to keep the heat outside your house from getting in, points out somebody else.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.